Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Thursday, June 5th, and we're here today for a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 129. I think I'm just going to go straight to work session on this bill. So we will now open a work session, and Ms. Sexton, could you give us Legislative Fiscal's view of the world here?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Senate Bill 129 came to Ways and Means Committee unamended through both the House and Senate Education Committees. I'm sorry, it must have amendments.
No,
it is unamended. I apologize, I'm working two bills at the same time.
Did
and
it come
I'm
through the House or just the Senate?
It's been through both House and Senate Education Committees before it came here.
No, this not having a public hearing on this is not a big deal.
I believe that's probably the case. This one does allow the State Board of Education to set, by administrative rule, fees for private career teacher registration and also fees to provide copies of private career student transcripts that they retain. The Department of Education does manage private career schools. There are over 250 career schools of a private nature in the state, and they range from cosmetology to tattoo artists to bartending, among others. And this bill deals with two issues. One is to be able to recapture some of the costs of providing some of the services, including the teacher registration, because currently the agency only obtains a license fee for an annual license fee for the schools themselves, and it's based on tuition income to the school. So it's a graduated fee. This would allow the agency to again recapture some of the costs of the registration process, which they have to go through under the current statute, and to provide copies of the transcripts that students may request. There's another element of the bill, which this has to do with the tuition protection fund that private career schools put money into, and this is to cover the costs of the department assisting students when the school to which the student has paid tuition goes out of business. Then this department facilitates getting the student into another school in order to complete that education cycle. And the provision in Senate Bill 129 is to allow the department to enter into contracts to facilitate that move into another school without having to go through the more lengthy public contracting process. So it exempts that process for the department from provisions of ORS 279 public contract bidding. There's also a non-substantive change in the bill, and that's in the existing fee schedule for the private career schools, and it's merely a cosmetic change to make the ranges of tuition on which the fees are based read properly. The bill would take effect July 1. There is no revenue impact. The minimal fiscal impact is based on an estimate from the department that revenues that they might generate from the teacher registration fee and the reimbursements for the cost of transcripts for students would be less than $35,000 a biennium.
Questions or comments for the LFO presentation? Ms. Ames, does BAM wish to weigh in on the bill? Could the department wish to weigh in?
Madam Chair?
Representative
Bates? Just a couple quick questions. Where does the funds come for the Tuition Protection Fund, and where do the funds come for copies from student tuition?
Madam Chair and Representative Bates, the Tuition Protection Fund is funded from revenue from the private career schools. I don't know what the amounts are, how those are assessed, and we do have a representative from that program who could define that more clearly. And then the costs for the transcripts would be paid by the students requesting the transcripts.
Okay.
Good morning.
Chair Morgan and members of the committee, I'm Ray Lindley, the Director of Private Career Schools and Veterans Education at the department. And Chair Morgan and Representative Bates, the answer to your question is there is a graduated fee schedule for all schools that they pay. There's an initial licensure fee of $1,050, and then every year they renew. There could be a minimum of $450 and a maximum of $2,850, depending on how much tuition they collected the previous year. And that is assessed every year. The money in the tuition protection fund, however, is a separate assessment on the schools, and they are basically vested at a certain amount depending on, once again, the amount of tuition that they collect. And it is the fund has currently about $1,500,000, and it is, as was mentioned, an opportunity if we have to go in when a school closes adversely and provide training for them or find another place to provide training. And that money also is provided by the schools.
What's the mechanics of that fund filling up? Is the assessment for the school based on the total amount of tuition? Is that how you decide how much each school puts in the fund?
Chair Bates, yes. That is, Chair Morgan, excuse me. That is correct. It is based on the amount of tuition the school collected the year before, and the way the legislature set it up about 12 years ago now was that a school will make payments into the fund, 14 semiannual payments or 7 years, and once the school is totally paid in, it pays no more. However, there is a provision in the original legislation that if the fund should be depleted to a certain amount, we can go back then and start assessing even schools that are fully funded.
Okay. Senator Mesrin.
I'm curious. Have we had failures, school failures, where you've had to step in, or what's the history?
Chair Morgan, Senator Meserly, I wish I could say no, but the answer is yes. We've had two recent ones, 1.5 years ago and 2 full years ago. A large computer school in downtown Portland basically walked away in the middle of the night, and we had to provide $200,000 out of the fund, and we were able to put these students into another school, and that is one of the reasons why our Attorney General has asked us to do the bidding process or to forego the bidding process, because that money is separate. And if we had gone through the bidding process or the contract bidding process, excuse me, we probably would have had to wait 60 to 90 days before we could place the students. And this became very disruptive, and if you can imagine, these students who have basically stepped out of life for a little bit, their income producing and their family members usually, because these are adults. And so we were able to work out a contract through Portland State University, which is another agency, without having to go through the bidding process. But it was very difficult. This would allow us to go in and directly work with a school. The second case of in response to your question was another school that closed, and they were vested at the amount of $100,000. We did not have another school to teach what they were teaching, and so we had $100,000 to divide among the students who were enrolled at the time of closure. We have the option of doing either one, and we certainly do all we can to find a school to do the teach out. We call it a teach out. But those are the two cases recently. I would think that prior to that, the last case was about 5 years ago, and it was a $30,000 amount that we were able to get a community college actually to do the teach up for us.
Further questions?
Well, Madam Chair, this is no wine should be drank before it's time. No bill should go out unamended, but I guess we have to break the rule here, aren't we?
I'd be glad to do that. And with that in mind, the Chair would accept a motion to move Senate Bill 129 to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a do-pass recommendation.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Senator Gordy has made the motion. Is there a discussion?
Sorry to mumble.
I'm giving you a bad time.
Slipped out, sorry.
Yeah.
Lost my head for a minute.
You did, yeah.
Does that constitute the discussion on the motion?
Yes, it does.
Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. paid, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 129. And Ms. Sexton, do you have any announcements for us?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. And besides needing a carrier for both the House and Senate,
yes,
and in full on this bill.
Let me take care of that.
Thank you.
Representative Bates has his hands full.
Does he?
In the Human Services arena.
Yes, I do.
All right, I'll be happy to carry that. I'd be just pleased to death.
I know that this is fertile training ground for junior members. So would you be so kind as to do this?
Junior member, you get one more session under the door.
Well, in this term limit environment, everything's relative.
Okay.
And would you do this, Representative Smith, in full and on the House floor? And Senator Gordy, could I prevail upon you for the Senate?
Yes.
Floor? Thank you. Now,
my announcement. Thank you, Madam Chair. for next week, the subcommittee's activities, according to Steve Bender, you'll be working on Tuesday and Wednesday, Department of Community College and Workforce Development budget. Currently, no meeting is scheduled for Monday, but by tomorrow morning, that will be reconfirmed with your offices.
Good. I'm going to get to 4 a.m. I can get up at 6. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, it's good for you,
too. That'd be good. At 4 o'clock, drive up is a killer, so.
And I'm sure the committee members don't wish any more information on Representative Bates' sleeping habits.
That's right.
So with that, we will adjourn this meeting and reconvene Tuesday morning unless that plan changes.
All right.